to answer a call that Riverkeeper and other environmental groups and other elected official groups and other medical groups have been making for months to actually do a health review. What his motivation for making that call is would be speculating, but certainly it could be, in part, all of the resistance and the growing movement against letting fracking moving forward, not just among environmental groups, but elected officials within New York, has caused him to want to slow the process down. We don't know that, but certainly doing a health review allowed him to do that. The thing, though, I have to say that we are concerned about is an AP press report came out today saying that one of the experts, Lynn Goldman, had said that she was asked by the state to finish her review by December 3rd. We haven't been able to confirm whether that's true or not. It would run counter to what the governor was saying just yesterday, which is that they're going to give the health review sufficient time for it to be done right. If someone at DOH or DEC is directing the people under contract to finish their review in an unconscionably short period of time, it defeats the whole purpose. So we remain concerned about that.
Kate Hudson is the Watershed Program Director for Riverkeeper. She spoke with WBAI's Rebecca Miles.
Fracking is a form of natural gas drilling, an alternative to oil, because the oil kept spilling, bringing jobs to small towns, so everybody's willing.
And that's some of the news for Wednesday, November 21st, 2012. The news was produced in New York with Jose Santiago, Rebecca Miles, and Linda Perry. I'm Andrea Sears in New York for the WBAI, listener-supported news.
A record 49.1 million Americans are now living in poverty.
Doing business with other banks, nobody trusts anyone.
The governments don't rule the world. Goldman Sachs rules the world.
I'm occupying Wall Street because if you're not outraged, then you're not paying attention.
I am occupying Wall Street because of the economy. I'm unemployed. I'm homeless.
I'm here because I care deeply about what's happening to the country. I'm 70 years old, and my entire life savings, my retirement, my IRA was literally embezzled by Wall Street brokers.
The people are getting nothing. People are losing their homes. People are losing their life savings. That ain't right, man.
We let these giant corporate banking behemoths rob the American people.
I want to see a system that works for everyone.
It's time for us as a citizenry to stand up and say, this is unacceptable and we're not going to take it anymore.
I want to inform people that capitalism doesn't have to be the way.
This country needs an enema. Well, the world needs an enema.
So you have to ask yourself the question, what matters?
The weakest of all political demands is, give me something to vote for. On September 17th, we decided our bodies are our votes. Our voices are our victories. Our unity is power. We're here, and we ain't going nowhere.
Good evening, and welcome back to Occupy Wall Street Radio and the Think Tank on Wednesday nights. I can't tell you how excited I am to be back on the air, back bringing more interesting dialogue to the airwaves. My name's Tim, and I occupy Wall Street.
I'm Rob Robinson, and I definitely support the Occupy Wall Street movement. I've been working in the housing movement in New York for a minute.
My name is Jason Harris. I work with the Occupy movement, Take Back Our City.
My name's Terry. I'm with Respond and Rebuild, and we're working with Occupy Wall Street to rebuild homes in the Rockaways and other affected areas.
My name is Harry. I'm with the Urban Rebuilding Initiative. I'm also a member of the campaign to end the new Jim Crow, and I support Occupy Wall Street.
My name is Steve Baldino. I work with Occupy Sandy and Staten Island Recovers.
My name is Becky, and I am part of Occupy Wall Street, and I am also organizing with Occupy Sandy.
My name is Brittany Anderson. I occupy Wall Street, and I'm a proud student of Hunter College.
All right, great. So we've got a full studio today. Lots of things going on. We're going to be talking about Occupy Sandy, Hurricane Sandy, and what could be construed as the disaster industrial complex. So we have a couple things to introduce with it a little bit. Obviously, Sandy's devastated the region to the tune of perhaps $50 billion. A couple questions with that. A, where's that money going to be coming from? Who's going to be doing that work, and who's going to be making money off of that? What happens to people on the ground? What happens to the people that still are struggling with no power in some places, heat, hot water, those kind of things? What about the racial divide of that outcome? What is that looking like, and why? Why might that be like that? When you look at things like Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans came out of that with a 26% increase in the median income, 600,000 people less in the city. You know, the age of everybody there went up. How is that possible? Or is that maybe because the low-income communities were pretty much pushed out and left out? So that's what we're looking at tonight. We're going to talk a little bit about Sandy. We're going to talk about the logistics of what's happening. We got some great people here in the studio that have been on the ground in the logistics booth doing technical work, doing a lot of different things. So without further ado, let's just get into that. Who wants to get up on stack first? We've got a couple people that we're doing. We're going to jump in on logistics.
My name's Steve Baldino again. I'm working with Occupy Sandy and Staten Island Recovers. I've spent the last few weeks on the ground in Staten Island and also working out of St. Jacoby in Brooklyn to coordinate relief efforts on Staten Island with Occupy Sandy. Right now I'm working out of Goodfellas Pizza. The overall picture of the organizations is that there are a lot of different groups working in parallel to try to match resources with needs, and it's been very difficult to share information about who still has needs, what needs have been met, and what areas really need to be focused on.
Who's up next?
Well, we've been out of the Bronx. You know, went straight to it. All right, well, straight to it, some logistics work. We've been doing trips from Harlem and the Bronx, donating supplies, water, flashlight, candles, baby clothes, food, perishables, to places like Jacoby, also to the spot on Clinton, where we've been out there actually bringing stuff that's been organized from other low-income communities around the city, particularly out of Harlem and the Bronx. Shout out to groups like the Riverside Church, the People Survival Movement, who's also been helping out. Actually, it was down yesterday in Coney Island doing a cookout, and on Sunday giving some food out to people. It's been a lot of stuff going down there, and I'm really proud to say there's a lot more groups that's been out there really doing some work logistically, bringing food and actually bringing stuff down there to help out with the Occupy Sandy thing and really get stuff out. Me, myself, I took in my two nieces who are in Long Beach who lost everything, who got displaced with over 40,000 people who live in that area in Nassau County, who are living right now in a college, in Nassau Community College right now, and I have my two nieces. But it's a lot of stuff. We got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Respond and Rebuild has been out in the Rockaways for about 3 weeks since about a day after the storm. We basically have been pumping out, cleaning out, and we've been pumping out, cleaning out, doing some mold remediation and gutting people's homes. Right now, one of the greatest risks that we see in terms of public health is that people have toxic mold growing in their homes, and it presents a huge risk. People can develop respiratory problems and eventually, after long-term exposure, die. We don't feel like there's enough information for residents in the area, and so we've started organizing trainings, and we started just getting in there and doing the work that we needed to do to make these houses safe to return to.
My perspective this week particularly has been doing medic dispatch for Occupy Sandy. I've been based out of Jacoby Church and sending, both doing intake of medical providers and supplies and sending, then getting, finding out needs out at the sites and sending them out. And it's become really apparent that there's still a big disconnect in communication between the sites. So that's something that really needs to get worked on. We had an amazing community meeting last night and we talked about it. That was one of the things that one of the breakout groups talked about, and we're starting to really work on inter-site communication. But yeah, medical needs, like you said, were, there's the Rockaway Coffice, but it's being coined out in the Rockaways. But there's some long-term medical issues from people who are stuck in their houses that are moldy or full of toxic sludge, and they can't afford to go anywhere else. So they're there.
Anybody else want to jump in just on the sort of introductory part?
Can I say something else about logistics? One of the things I want to put out there, it's a couple of collection songs still being taken up at the Kingsbridge Armory. Also, Bronx and Harlem supply donations can be given to the National Black Theater, 2301 Fifth Avenue between 125th and 126th Street up in Harlem. Also, prepared food donations can be given out, can be collected at 140 West 140th Street between Malcolm X Boulevard and Adam Clayton Powell. We also have another collection spot up there in Parkchester between Soundview and Castle Hill at 1374 Thiriot Avenue, where folks can bring, the list goes on here, just to give out some stuff, especially for tomorrow, to get some stuff out to people. Beef, turkey, chicken hot dogs, hot dog buns, perishable food, canned goods, bags of rice, cleaning supplies, you know, gloves, masks. Blankets, a lot of blankets. Folks really need a lot of blankets for the older folks. And shout out to the Youth Task Force out on the Rockaways, who are some young kids who've been also doing some stuff there logistically.
Yeah, and I've been organizing the displaced residents of a Hunter College dormitory that was evacuated ahead of the storm. And we still aren't able to go back and aren't quite sure when we'll be able to go back.
Can you tell us a few numbers on that?
Yeah, there are 600 students who live there, where most of us are from low-income, working-class backgrounds and worked really hard to pay to be there. And we've really felt abandoned by the administration. We put out a petition asking for a timeline of when we're going to return, some emergency accommodations for people who truly had nowhere to go.
How many people have been put in emergency accommodation so far?
About 60 last time I checked.
Out of 600?
Yeah, and some... a way of reimbursing transportation costs. We had students who were paying $150 a week to commute to class.
How is their tuition? Obviously, they're paying for that housing accommodation. Are they still having? Do they still have to pay for that?
Yeah. Well, it was you pay at the beginning of the semester, so it's already been paid for. And so, in theory, they'll reimburse us, but that's something we'll probably have to actually fight for. So,
obviously, yeah. City housing residents are still having to pay rent as well.
Yeah, and so
interesting.
Yeah, so we put out a petition, and things seem to have improved a little bit, but yeah.
So, you know, this is Rob. I want to say I've been taking personally a cautious approach to the work on the ground. While I admire everything that's being done on the ground, I've done so much work in the Gulf Coast region after Katrina. It makes me a little bit hesitant. I think what happened post-Katrina is a lot of folks came into New Orleans and decided, we're going to help you, right? People came in from all around the country. We're going to help you, and we're going to decide how your life should be. And I would just caution folks to really open up spaces for dialogue, to really talk to folks and let folks tell us what they need and how we can support them. But again, I do admire all the relief efforts. It is really incredible.
Yeah, and that actually brings us to the next part of our conversation, really, which is about the effectiveness of getting this done, getting relief, getting recovery done. What can we say about that? Obviously, there's a lot of factors, a lot of players involved in this, the Red Cross, FEMA, Occupy Sandy's big player in that, Mayor Bloomberg, all of those people. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, one of the things I guess I'd like to say is about that is the Red Cross and FEMA stuff, actually, for a lot of the people who have been displaced, actually is not even applicable. It doesn't even help people out. People like my sister and them who are renters, you know, who, because they don't own the property, because, you know, they are just renting and tenants in the building, don't get FEMA insurance, don't get help and support from groups like the Red Cross, except for a meal sandwich that they might ride by on the noon in the middle of the day to give out to people as a goodwill to you know, goodwill token. But the reality is one of the things I wanted to say before is with you is like actually a lot of our members was actually down in New Orleans and Katrina, and we were actually bringing college students up there from Hunter College to actually participate in the rebuilding thing. And I think the difference here between folks in Katrina and in New York City is a lot of this is being done by New York City residents. It's not just like people on a distance and we looking for people to come help us. We know what we want. The reality is that the money isn't coming to us. It's not being given to us to do as we want to do in the way we want to rebuild. It's given to these mainstream groups, and not to throw shade on Occupy Sandy, because a lot of the groups I'm working with weren't even going through the Occupy Network, even though we were supporting the Occupy Network and connecting and coordinating with a couple of folks in the Occupy Network, but we're going directly into the communities, into the epicenters of the NYCHA housing buildings in like Coney Island, Far Rockaway, Red Hook, and even going out to Nassau County's to Nassau County, which until 4 days ago was still deemed a critical zone, where for the last 4 weeks people still have been without power, gas, and stuff like that. And you know, I think that, you know, in touching on that question, it's not only the fact that, you know, the dialogue needs to be created. This movement thing, unfortunately, it takes an event like this to really push a movement forward and see where it's really at. But this movement thing really needs to get behind it and say to the city, to the people like Mayor Bloomberg, who is on the news and on places like 1010 Wind, saying, hey, don't bring food because it's not feasible to give people food, but donate to the city so that the city can get money and create a program like Rapid Rebuild, which only helps people who are wealthier or property owners, you know what I'm saying, who have substantial value in the community, as opposed to getting real resources to the people in NYCHA houses, which, you know, NYCHA, as you said before, is still paying rent. NYCHA's talking about they're going to give some people some credit that's going to come on in January, but it really doesn't take effect. You know what I mean? It really doesn't do anything. And it just, for me, this really hits so personally, and I know you want me to kind of hurry up, but for me, it's really personal because, you know, I'm watching right now a 1-year-old and 5-year-old girl, 4 weeks after this madness has happened, who wake up with nightmares crying because they can't see their mother when they want to, and because they hear things like water. My little niece, 5 years old, spent 11 days in Manhasset shelter, and they wouldn't, the shelter people, and this is how crazy this system is. You want to talk about industrial or industrial complex, whatever you want to call it, how crazy the system is that New York City or New York State would not allow the release of a 5-year-old girl to their own family who had adequate proof to provide housing for the girl, because they wanted to keep them in there, to keep the people of that shelter, right, to be able to do their job and to be able to facilitate some type of quote-unquote help to people in the community who need it. But in reality, what was happening is you had people becoming displaced and mentally scarring children who are going through this horrible thing. I mean, my niece still wakes up in the middle of the night talking about, I hear water. Because when they were in their house, 12 feet of water was in, it was in their house. You know what I mean? When they woke up, this is just, sorry, it was just personally, you know, it's crazy.
But and this is the type of stories that are not getting out enough, because it affects us all differently.
Absolutely. And shout out
Manhattan
to
Manhattan had power right away.
Yeah, and shout out to WBAI. I give a lot of respect to WBAI, because they were, the couple of days after the storm, we were tweeting about the stuff, and WBAI was retweeting a lot of the stuff, helping to get the word out. So
there's a lot of trauma. That's one of the things that I specifically have been focusing on, is trying to coordinate mental health providers there and body workers, and trying to provide wellness to both our volunteers who are getting burned out, and also to get out into the communities, because now we're sort of past what I've been calling that triage state, where we're going in and trying to make sure that people it's not like patching up injuries now. We're past that. We're in for the long-term sustainability of this, and we're dealing with the much deeper issues, the trauma, the fact that your niece can't hear water without getting scared, of the fact, and like, I'm sure there's an incredible amount of trauma that people have gone through here, and making sure that is faced and approached and not ignored is incredibly, like, there aren't words for how important that is.
Going back to some issues that we've had in terms of homeownership versus non-homeownership, When we deal with homeowners, people, it doesn't necessarily mean everything's worked out for them. A lot of people have paid into these insurance systems their entire lives. They've always, as they tell me, we've always done things the right way. We always followed the rules, and now we're getting screwed. People don't have the kind of insurance that covers any kind of mold remediation. And if people like us aren't doing this work right now, you know, a few weeks down the line, they're going to have to pay $15,000 to have somebody else come in and do work that's beyond what we are capable of doing. We also have been in situations where we've been working with tenants, but we'd like to get homeowner permission first. We can sometimes do that, and that's great. But the real problem is that we have tenants who whose landlords still haven't called them. We have people who won't leave their moldy homes because they're afraid if they leave, they won't be able to come back. We have people who won't leave the homes that they're in that desperately need to be gutted, that are really a public health problem right now, because, and I can't, you know, prove this, but because I think that they're undocumented families and they don't know, because they're cut off from the world, they don't have internet, they're not getting news, they don't know that the shelters are open for them too. And one of the biggest problems we're seeing is that there are some landlords who are coming in, gutting houses, and then putting drywall up the same day without doing any kind of mold remediation. And so we're organizing on that front as well to get those people the numbers of legal help as soon as we can. And it's a little difficult because that information is scattered, and it's changed a lot over the course of the last 3 weeks, but we are trying to get that information out to those people.
And the city of Hoboken, I heard, put in an ordinance that it's $1,000 fine a day for landlords who are not showing that they are actually actively getting people into the houses to check on electrical work, to do mold, that type of stuff, to take a look at it, because obviously there's a problem that landlords are saying, hey, I don't care, I'm just renting.
Just a quick response to that. One of the other things that we're trying to work on is, and someone else will know the name of this that better than I will, but it's something like right to repair that tenants have. If the landlord's not addressing some kind of issue within a particular period of time, we can go in and we can do that work, and they are supposed to get reimbursed. If it costs them anything, we're not charging them anything, but we're looking into our rights in terms of that so we can help people who kind of have no rights over the property they're in.
That's one of the biggest, just going off what you just said, that's one of the biggest challenges we're facing is communication and how to communicate stuff to people who don't have power, don't have access to internet, because we can communicate amongst ourselves and do this organizing, but to communicate all this information and all these resources that are available to the people is a really challenging thing. One thing that Occupy Sandy's done is put up these amazing signs with distances to different resources all over Staten Island and the Rockaways. They're really nice design, and they're really eye-catching and visible.
Well, that also kind of brings us to another question of the organizations themselves. There's been a lot in the media about Occupy Sandy actually getting a lot of things done. Affiliates obviously doing a lot with it. What about the Red Cross? They haven't been seen as much. What about FEMA? People are saying, well, FEMA stops by and then doesn't, they say, they give us a number and then leave. And we don't have any power. We can't even make a phone call. So what are you guys' assessments of what's happening on the ground with these big organizations? Where are they falling short?
Hi, I'm Steve. One thing I will say is that these organizations are operating and they are accomplishing something, but there is a lot of resentment towards government organizations who have a large number of resources and are not using them as quickly. Particularly volunteers, like I know guys who've been on Staten Island working 18 hours a day helping people, and they say see the FEMA guys working 9 to 5, and that's frustrating for people, and so they will say negative things about FEMA in some cases. But what I do want to say, just to put out some facts, FEMA does have 200 people going door to door constantly just on Staten Island, and I only know Staten Island, and I did get these fat stats from FEMA. So we'll take that.
Are they really actually out there, though? Because I haven't heard a lot of reports of people actually.
I've seen them.
Okay.
I didn't count them. But FEMA also has spent tens of millions of dollars to help people who have been affected, and they've relocated, registered and relocated close to 18,000 people, and they're paying their rent for up to 18 months. So that they are doing some good things.
We just got a short bit of time now. I'm just going to jump in with a couple sentences from each person.
So this is Rob. I'll just say, and you heard Bernie talk a little bit about what's happening on Long Island. I think a whole different set of things are happening on Long Island. I'm from Freeport, the South Shore of Nassau County. I'll be out there this weekend to do some assessments. As he said, Island Park, Long Beach is devastated. And, you know, I think, you know, attention has to be brought to this problem in a broad umbrella.
FEMA and the Red Cross are out there. What I've heard is that FEMA is offering loans with 6% interest. I've heard stories about the Red Cross bringing boxes of sandwiches, but then leaving them on the ground floor of a 20-story building.
Do they check your credit on that?
And not bringing them up, and they're perishables in a building that's not refrigerated. Doesn't have refrigeration.
Something I think that's different about people doing this kind of work with people is that we're approaching the idea of helping a different way. We know that there's a politics of help, and we are there asking people what they need, and we're responding to what they need. We're not showing up with an emergency relief kit that people may or may not have any use for, and that's why we've kind of become part of the community down there.
Well, the reality is I just want to say this, is Governor Cuomo came on the radio and said that most of the repair cost and the expense of this is going to come on the people who are affected by that. And that's an absolute reality. And I just want to say shout out to all the people who are on the ground, man, doing this work themselves, man. People power, power to the people now and always, man.
Okay, so that's pretty much going to run through the show for tonight. I do want to announce that next Friday, there will be an Occupy Sandy fundraiser at Amarachi Lounge in Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn, right near Clinton Hill, 325 Franklin Avenue. That's at Franklin Avenue and Clifton Place. Again, 7 o'clock next Friday, there will be an Occupy Sandy fundraiser. So to each and everybody, stay strong out there. Keep working. We're going to get through this with or without the institutions that are either taking or giving. Have a good night.
Coming up Wednesday, November 21st, the show heard on WBAI in conjunction with WBAI brings you another after-work celebration of funk, soul, R&B, disco, and hip-hop. If you missed it back in September, here's your chance to join in and party to music from the 70s to today. And celebrate the birthdays of hip-hop legends Kool DJ Red Alert and JDL of the Cold Crush Brothers. It's free to get in, but a portion of the proceeds from the bar will go to support WBAI. Plus, there's no work the next day. I'll be on the set as your DJ, Miss ID, a.k.a. Ife, as well as DJ Max Jerome. That's Wednesday, November 21st, 6 to 10 p.m. at Le Croissant Rouge, 158 Bleecker Street in Manhattan. For more information, please call 212-209-2941. 99.5 WBAI.
Hi, I'm Daryl Cherney, producer of the feature documentary Who Bombed Judy Barry, which premieres this week in New York City at the Quad Cinema. Without WBAI and the Pacifica Network, people wouldn't know about how Judy Barry and I were car-bombed while working to save the Redwoods and arrested by the FBI for the bombing committed against us. Now, to give thanks in a time of need, we're donating all the proceeds from our movie this week to WBAI, except for Saturday Night, which benefits the Museum of Reclaimed Urban Space. The movie screens now through Thursday, November 22nd at the Quad Cinema, 36 West 13th Street, 2 shows a day, 4 and 8 p.m. Come on down and see Who Bombed Judy Barry and support WBAI. Advance tickets available at quadcinema.com.
Yeah. Something different, man.
What's up?
Something new.
This is Saigon.
Something special.
When I'm in New York City, I listen to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, Peace and Justice Radio. And when I'm not in New York, I listen to WBAI.org. So check it out. Listen and learn something. Peace.
They come to the ghetto to see what it is.
33 cents a day. Not much, is it? Loose change. A third of a cup of coffee. It's nothing. But did you know that 33 cents a day can help WBAI stay on the air? That's all it takes. As little as 33 cents a day, $10 a month, you can be a BAI buddy. A BAI buddy is someone who signs up to make a recurring monthly donation to WBAI using either a credit card, debit card, or by electronic fund transfer from your bank account. It's safe, secure, and easy, and it helps keep our unique, alternative, and diverse programming on the air. You'll get a WBAI membership card and other goodies. Sign up online. Go to WBAI.org and click on donate. All the details are right there. The WBAI buddy. Be one today.
Got questions about your computer?
Mm-hmm.
Want to know about the latest electronics?
Yeah.
Are you confused by high-definition TV?
A little.
Well, tune into WBAI every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for the Personal Computer Show.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's every Wednesday on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh.
So why don't you tell a friend?
Well, okay.
And tell your boss.
Well.
Hey, call your mom and tell them about the Personal Computer Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM.